Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is Dean Richards with our Food Time program, Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show. This week featuring a couple of different topics. We are smack in the middle of pumpkin season with Halloween tomorrow and Thanksgiving right around the corner. We're going to get to that in a couple of minutes. But I wanted to get you up to date on something which is brand new in Chicago, the first ever Strange Foods Chicago Festival. Joining us on the phone line to talk about it is Ken Siskovath, who is a local Instagrammer and kind of the brainchild behind this event. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Dean. How are you? I'm good.
Nice to have you with us. So explain, what is Strange Foods Festival?
Strange Foods Festival. That's like it's like the revival food hall for one day. One day under one roof, we get mom-and-pop restaurants serving up their most authentic dishes. It's a tasting for the guests. And we're also having a dance performance by four different cultures.
Okay.
So it'd be a great day.
Well, that, so far it doesn't sound that strange to me. It sounds like really interesting and a collection of foods from different countries. Explain the strange foods part.
The strange foods part. It's more like strange foods is more like to catch people's attention. And it would be strange for people who are not familiar with that culture.
For example,
for that culture is normal. So, you know, it's going to be like a lot of food. There's going to be like food that, you know, it's going to look different and it's going to be prepared different. But in the end, people are going to love it.
Yeah. So foods that are common from around the world, but something that we might not be familiar with here in the United States or in the Chicago area.
Yep. Well, let's take, for example, Harabe Mexican street food. They're going to serve a Maxwell Street classic, which is eyeballs taco, which is they had that back then. Like, they eat that all the time. They serve it all the time in Maxwell Street. And it's really tasty. It just doesn't sound appealing, eyeball tacos.
Eyeball tacos definitely does not sound appealing. What do you know? Do you know what's in eyeball tacos?
Eyeball tacos is, well, it's just eyeballs. And basically, it gives you, it's like a fatty texture, fatty, it tastes fatty, like bone marrow, and you just put it in a tortilla and, you know, lime and cilantro, just like a regular taco, and you eat it.
So this is actual, like, what, the eyeballs of a cow?
Yeah,
a cow?
It's chopped up, pig, it's chopped up, and, you know, you won't even tell. Basically, it's just fat in a taco.
Okay. I'm starting to understand the strange part a little better now. What are some of the other strange foods that will be featured?
Another one is a dish that Rick Bayless actually just recently introduced to the public. It's huitlacoche, which is corn smut fungus, and it's like the truffles from Mexican people.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so yeah, it's like an earthy taste. So we. So, Corrido, they're going to make a quesadilla with corn smut.
Corn smut?
Yeah, smut. It's black corn fungus. The term in Mexican is huitlacoche.
Okay. I heard fungus in there. Okay.
Yeah.
I got
that. Yeah.
Truffle sounds way better than fungus.
Yeah, it does, but it tastes just like, you know, like, it's the Mexican version of truffles.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, I notice that you are a Laotian born. Will there be food from Laos?
Yeah, it was difficult to get a Lao vendor in Chicago because there's really no Lao restaurant in Chicago. Actually, it's very rare. It's not mainstream. Lao food's not mainstream. So, but the whole part of my Instagram also is introduce Lao food to the public.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been slowly introducing different dishes. So our vendor is actually coming from Georgia. are lao vendor, and they're just traveling all the way here just to participate in a festival.
Isn't that interesting that we wouldn't have a Laotian chef here in Chicago, but they do in Georgia? I don't know why that strikes me so unusual.
Yeah, and in the city, there's not that many Lao people. I probably know of maybe four people.
Yeah.
And the whole city, they are just spread out in like Streamwood, Carroll, Elgin.
Yeah.
Area. So
I guess now that you mention it, I guess I never have either. Now that I think about it, we have Vietnamese and people who are from Thailand and all over the Far East. But but not now that you mention it. Now this is such a clever idea for a festival. I mean, if you're an adventurous eater, to try different things, what an interesting idea! There are going to be more than 15 restaurants offering food from around the world. It'll be at the Moonlight Studios on a week from today, actually, Sunday, November the 6th, the first Strange Food Chicago Festival that'll take place. If people would like to get tickets or to join you, what's the best way to do that, Ken?
Tickets, they can go to strangefoodschicagofestival.eventbrite.com, or they can just Google Strange Food Chicago Festival and a bunch of links will pop up.
Okay.
Or they could go to my Instagram at Strange Food Chicago, and in the bio link, they can click that. Or go to Facebook, Strange Food Chicago. It's not hard to find the link for tickets.
Lots of good places there. Ken Siskovath, appreciate you joining me. Hey, if I get there late, save me one of those eyeball tacos, will you?
All right. I'll put you down there, Dean.
nice to talk to you. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Just real quick, we asked you for some unusual things that you've eaten. Adam, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hello there.
What was your strange food?
Well, Mom decided to make homemade gefilte fish.
Oh, yes. I've never had gefilte fish. It looks disgusting in the jar. It looks disgusting.
No, horseradish, it's good. But homemade, when you take the whole fish and drop it into the meat grinder and the head and everything, and then you got to make a little ball out of it.
Right.
And not so good, but they're delicious.
You had me at fish head. Thanks. Thanks for the call, Adam. Hey, Denny, how are you? You're on WGN.
Hey, good morning, guys. Or I should say, I'm sorry, good afternoon. Well, I was born in what used to be Czechoslovakia, and one of the Christmas dishes was carp and potato salad. No, but no matter what you do, you can't make carp good. It's just a horrible fish. However, our family had a special dish we made only on Christmas. This is the only time we made it. And basically what it was to replicate seafood. Czechoslovakia, obviously, it's a landlocked country, so seafood was, especially during the communist era, unattainable. You couldn't get it. So what my family did, or my grandmother did, she took a pork loin that you boil, and you boil it until there's pretty much no flavor left. You take that and you grind it. While you're grinding it, you use pickled herring. You put pickled herring in there.
Ugh.
Anchovy paste.
And what kind of paste?
Anchovy paste.
Anchovy paste, of course. Anchovy paste.
Yeah. So it makes kind of this little paste. It's kind of like the consistency of, I don't know. It's just, basically just a ground minced meat.
Yeah.
And then you serve that in a scallop shell.
Huh.
And then you put Parmesan cheese on the top, and you put it under the broiler, and you bake it, serve it with lemon.
Well, that doesn't sound
as
bad, though.
As weird as it sounds, it's actually quite delicious, and I look forward to Christmas just because I can have that one thing once a year.
That doesn't – the Parmesan and the lemon and all that stuff saved it for me. That doesn't sound bad. It's so funny, like ethnic specialties, the Greeks during the Lenten season leading up, when you break the fast on Easter Sunday, there's a traditional soup that's made of intestines and the innards and like all the parts of the lamb that you don't normally eat. They make it into a soup. The soup is actually very tasty, but then when you tell somebody what's in it, it grosses everybody out. I don't know why. That's a great recipe, Denny. Thank you very much.
Hey, good looking. Well, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something over me?
Eat it. Food, glorious food. Hot sausage and mustard.
And our Food Time show continues. Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show, the award-winning Food Time, heard every Sunday more or less at this time. And now we continue with the subject that is so popular right now, maybe more popular than ever. The subject is pumpkins. Pumpkin-flavored everything these days. At the Cubs party that I was at last night, many people were raving about pumpkin-flavored beer that they were drinking. I'm kind of old school in my beer drinking. I prefer no flavors in my beer, I don't think. But they were raving about it. They loved it. The coffee-flavored pumpkin everything that's out there right now. There's no doubt that pumpkin is more popular than ever. There's a fantastic cookbook that came out a while back called For the Love of Pumpkins. If you're a fan, you need to check out. It is written by Marilyn Alice Tuckman. Marilyn, nice to have you back on the show. Welcome back.
Oh, hello, Dean. It's wonderful to be back, especially at this time.
Oh, my gosh. You must be just so gratified at how, pumpkin is like the favorite flavor of America right now.
Well, the flavor is one thing, but the real thing is something else.
Very
true.
And
I'm not sure what they're putting in to products that they are calling pumpkin. It might be that pumpkin is just a wonderful carrier for the flavors of the warm brown spices that we love so much.
Yeah, well, I'm sure most of them are very chemically created.
Yeah, kind of contrived, maybe.
Yeah, I've never come close to an actual pumpkin, but nonetheless, it's a very popular flavor right now. And,
yes.
And very relevant for us because Illinois is the pumpkin capital of the United States of America, is it not?
That's right. 90% of all the pumpkin is canned and grown here in Illinois. And pumpkin pie is now the Illinois state pie because of this. And we're in pumpkin land here for sure.
Nonetheless, have we heard either of our presidential candidates discussing the pros and cons of pumpkin? No, we have not. No.
That's because everything is positive about a pumpkin. Everything.
Might be one of the more relevant things that we've heard our candidates talking about. So when you're cooking with pumpkin, is it better to cook with a real pumpkin or is canned pumpkin sometimes preferred?
Sometimes the canned is preferred because it's solid packed already. And the way it's produced here, when you buy the pure pumpkin, there's no sodium in it, nothing added to it. It's just pure pumpkin, unless you buy the mix that already has spices.
You mean the sugar in it. Canned pumpkin has additives?
They usually have no additives. And that's why I kind of think that it's great to use pumpkin year-round, because it's available canned. You're going to open a can of peas or a can of corn. Why not open a can of pumpkin and use it while we're cooking? This morning I put it in our oatmeal.
Wow.
Just put a couple tablespoons in for each serving and cook it in and go ahead and spice it however you want.
I'll bet that was delicious.
I put in a chopped apple, a Gala apple.
Oh, yeah.
And raisins, and we cooked that slowly. And sprinkle walnuts on that. It's just delicious.
Oh, that is
delicious.
A fantastic, and that's just regular pumpkin out of the can.
Right. If you're going to open up a can of anything, why not open up a can of pumpkin?
Why not open up a can of pumpkin?
Yes, it's a wonderful food. It has such good things for us. There's such vitality in pumpkin.
Yeah. I was
looking at it.
Yeah, I was at a restaurant the other day, and I had my first pumpkin soup of the season. It's one of my favorite, absolute favorite soups. Pumpkin soup is so delicious. If I wanted to try that at home, how do I go about doing that?
Oh, you want to make the roasted pumpkin soup.
Okay.
When you roast pumpkin, you get something really special. And I explain this in my book, that you want to use about a 4-pound pumpkin, 4 to 5 pounds, and you seed it and peel it, and then put it into a Pyrex pan, a glass. I use two of them because it's so important not to crowd the pumpkin. If you have it too crowded when you roast it, it's going to just merely steam and bake.
Okay.
But if you give it some space between the pieces so they get those toast points on it, a little bit of blackening.
Yeah.
Oh, that's delicious. And
you probably want a little caramelization
absolutely. From that and heat. Absolutely. Little olive oil drizzled on there.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yes. And that's delicious. And then that's what you use.
How long am I roasting that pumpkin?
Well, it depends on your temperature. If you want to use 350, go an hour and a half. If you want to use 400, you can usually get it tender, fork tender, in about an hour.
Okay. But that's the point, to brown it up a little bit and to get it fork tender.
Yes, all yes. Right. Yes, and then I put that into a pot with apple cider, not cider vinegar, apple cider.
That would be a different taste, yeah.
Yes, and I use Macintosh apple in mine, and it's delicious, and vegetable broth, and a few cloves of crushed garlic in there, and just cook that. It's wonderful, and I make a black pepper crouton with that. And it's absolutely fabulous with that too.
Okay, so walk me through this again, though. So I've got my roasted pumpkin.
Yes.
And the apples, you say, and that's all going to go into apple cider and vegetable broth.
Yeah, you want to use vegetable broth, about 5 cups of vegetable broth, a cup of cider, apple cider,
okay. And
one apple. Macintosh is my favorite for this, and one onion chopped. And about 4 cloves of crushed garlic.
Okay, am I chopping or processing the pumpkin, anything, or is it just
going
in chunks?
After you've roasted it, you add it in there and just cook it, let it simmer, and as you're simmering it, just break it up with a spoon.
Okay.
And when the apple is tender, the soup is done. And it doesn't take too long for the apple to become tender at this point. I finished it in like 15 minutes last week.
Yeah, because you're cooking the pumpkin while you're roasting it, basically.
Yeah, so it's already cooked.
It's really just melding those flavors together, I think, right?
Yes, yes. And then I cool it down just for safe handling, and I use an immersion blender and blend it. You can use a food processor or a regular blender, but it's kind of dangerous if you put the cover on. You have to keep it uncovered while you blend it so it doesn't build pressure inside.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
So you want to use like an immersion blender or a blender and then puree it.
That sounds really tasty. The pumpkin soup that I had mm-hmm. had a slight curry flavor to it.
Yeah, I guess you could do that too if you want.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's a matter of, you know, the taste that you want. But, now that you kind of know the basics of it, you know, think about what you may want to add to it. You may want to put a little nutmeg on it. I don't know.
Yes.
You know, whatever tickles your fancy with that. But it's pretty simple, is my point.
Pumpkin is a carrier for all of that. It carries the flavors. It's not really pumpkin. If you taste the pumpkin itself, it's like applesauce is a carrier for things, too.
Right.
And I'll tell you, both of them work for cutting down fat in a recipe because I use pumpkin puree to cut some of the oil out of muffins and breads.
Right.
And it makes it less heavy. And
I cannot wait to try that pumpkin oatmeal.
Just put a couple of tablespoons. A little more, 2 tablespoons per serving is about right. If you put more than that, it can be off-putting in color.
So do you think if I had just like, you know, my regular oatmeal that I do in the microwave and put a little tablespoon of pumpkin in there and stir it up, will that work?
It probably would. It probably would. It'll cook in.
I'm going to definitely try that tomorrow.
Try it. Put some in.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, you're going to tell us how to make the greatest pumpkin pie in the history of pumpkin pie. Is that
okay.
All right? Okay.
Okay.
Marilyn Alice Tuckman's the author of the book For the Love of Pumpkins. Oh, it's a classic. Charles Schulz, Peanuts. cartoons. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And now our guest, Marilyn Alice Tuckman, author of the book, For the Love of Pumpkins, tells us how to make great pumpkin pie. Marilyn, can you do that?
I'll tell you. Go to the store and buy one.
No, come on now.
My book has so many other things. I have three pies in there, and there are so many other ways to use pumpkin besides just Thanksgiving and this time of the year.
Well, I know there are lots of ways, but if I wanted to do pumpkin pie.
Well, I think that this might be a little complicated, but it's my mother's chiffon pie, the pumpkin pie.
Okay, this is a good alternative. Let's try it.
Okay. Now, one thing about this is my mother made this many, many years ago, and they didn't have pasteurized eggs back then. Now they do, so you must use pasteurized eggs because this is not baked. That's the thing.
Okay.
See, this is one of the reasons. So right there, you must do that first.
Okay, I got you. I heard you.
Okay. So you're going to use a half a cup of whole milk. You want 3 egg yolks from large pasteurized eggs. You want 3/4 cup firmly packed light brown sugar, 1 envelope of unflavored gelatin, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon ground nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/8 teaspoon ground cloves. Those are really important in here. It tastes so good.
Okay.
And 1 1/2 cups of pure pumpkin puree, the canned stuff.
Okay, the canned stuff.
And 3 egg whites from the large pasteurized eggs.
Got to be pasteurized. I don't know if people heard that. It's got to be pasteurized. All right.
Yeah. Okay. And 1/2 cup granulated sugar.
Okay.
And you want to have a pie crust already baked.
Right.
Have that already done. So you're going to prepare this in a 2-quart saucepan. And you're going to whisk together the milk and the next 7 ingredients that I gave you through the cloves. And you cook that over a low heat, stirring constantly until the gelatin and the sugar have dissolved and the mixture begins to thicken, which is about 3 to 4 minutes. You can kind of feel it, like if it's gritty.
Right. So once that's mixed, only because we're up against the clock here, once that's mixed and then you pour it into the pie shell and just let it sit, right?
You have to refrigerate that until it becomes...
Okay. So the mixture again, I'm just speeding you along here because we're up against the clock.
About 15 minutes. You wanted a good pumpkin pie here.
I know. And then I didn't think it was going to be like War and Peace, though.
I wanted to give you my salad dressing because that's so simple and you can make it year-long.
Okay, give me 30 seconds. Okay, apparently you do have to go to the store if you want pumpkin pie.
Yeah,
what's your salad dressing?
Let me give you the salad dressing.
I have 30 seconds for salad dressing.
Okay, 1/4 cup honey, 3 tablespoons cider vinegar, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 2 teaspoons finely minced red onion, 1/4 cup pure pumpkin puree, 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, and 1 teaspoon of poppy seeds. And put this over butter lettuce, the soft butter lettuce.
Oh, that sounds good. Okay, that sounds good.
It's wonderful.
All right.
And sometimes I don't put the poppy seeds in, and sometimes I use dehydrated minced onion.
You're crazy like that.
Yeah, you can move it around. This is a wonderful recipe and you can do it year-round.
Okay.
Have it in the refrigerator.
There are a lot of good recipes
in the book. Loaded.
Apparently, if you want pumpkin pie, you have to go to the store, though.
Yeah, my pumpkin pies are a little more complicated. There was only 3 of them in the book because pumpkin can be used in so many other ways.
Gotcha.
And they're not
for
common
the love,
pies.
Okay, For the Love of Pumpkins, For the Love of Pumpkins is the name of the book. It's Marilyn Alice Tuckman,